are now tuned in to Shotgun Sports USA, powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S. and streaming all over the world, your host Justin Barker talks to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you're into clay target sports, you're at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com.
Being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by Pro-Matic traps?" I thought about that statement, and he's right. And you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, five-stand, and sporting clays designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the ClayBot by Rainier Products. Visit BackwoodsQuailClub.com or give Rick a call at 843-546-1466. Castellani Shooting Vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vest on the market. Castellani Vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier for Castellani Vests in the United States. Visit UltimateShootingAccessories.com for more information and to place your order. I have two guests on the show today that have been at the top of their game for a long time. I caught up with them at Forest City Gun Club in Savannah, Georgia, to ask them a few questions that I had about my shooting. I wanted to share this with all of you and hope that you can get something out of this conversation. The audio on this episode is not as clean as I would like it, but the information included makes up for it. Please welcome to the show Zach Keenbaum and Desiree Edmonds. This is going to be a little different episode here. What I want to do is ask, I've had Zach Keenbaum and Desi Edmonds here with me, and I've shot with them a few times, and I kind of want to ask the questions that I have when I go to a shoot. I have taken notes. I went to the Southeast Regional and made notes of what I was doing wrong. And I told Zach, look, I want to get with you, and I want to ask you these questions, and I want to record it so that the people listening, if they have the same kind of questions, can hear the answers.
Let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right after a tournament too, while everything's still fresh.
Yeah.
I feel like that's one of the best scenarios. Zach agrees. That's one of the best scenarios where feedback immediately helps your game immensely. You haven't sat around for 2-3 weeks at a time and then try and think back to the tournament and go, well, I can't quite remember what I felt went wrong, but I kind of remember. So right after a tournament.
Well, we are a few weeks after the tournament.
Yeah, but I took these notes during. I was actually typing these notes out on my phone because that's all I had during
that's
the tournament.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So these are questions that I had. You know, I would go shoot a stand and say, I need to make a note of that because I want to ask that. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And I want both of you to answer. You good with that? So the first problem I had, and this was at the Southeast Regional, and, you know, I work full-time. I have two kids and that baseball and all that takes up a lot of my time. So I don't have a whole lot of time to shoot. But the questions that I had, I'm going to start with gun mount. My gun mount seemed to be really inconsistent, way more inconsistent than any other time before.
Right.
I'd mount my gun. It wouldn't be in the right spot. Before I call pull, I would mount it. That don't feel right. I'd pull it out. I'd mount it again. That don't feel right. And then I finally thought, okay, this feels right. And I pull the trigger and it wasn't right. How do I correct that?
Gun mount is one of those things you've got to practice even when you're not shooting. I can't tell you how many gun mounts I've done in the past 30 years at home. You need to practice, whether in front of a mirror or in a room where you have different lines of the ceiling or roof or whatever it is. But just perfect that mount to your face. You want to bring the gun to your face and then learn muscle memory of what it actually feels like in your shoulder. The other part of that is your vest or the clothing you're wearing. Sometimes different clothing can affect how that gun mount feels.
Yeah.
I know, but I fully understand what you're saying. Sometimes I've gone to a round, and it's not through the whole weekend, but like that first round of the event, the gun just feels a little differently. What I've learned in the past is that just roll with it. If it does feel right, look at the bird, do everything else correctly, and I think that the scores will come around. You'll shoot fairly well, but I'll be honest, that's also a lot of experience in that. When you're worried about it, if you're too stressed about it, if you're thinking about my gun, as you call pool or you're in the cage and your mind is filled with my gun feels weird, then you're not in the right mindset to be killing that target.
Right. Well, I caught myself, okay, it don't feel right. I've mounted this gun. I'm about to call pool. It really don't feel right. So let me just keep checking the bird.
Right.
You know, let me look at the lead, or let me look at this or that and another. Yeah. And it just don't end up.
Well, you're kind of answering the question there yourself.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, I don't know. You answered it, you know, just the gun mount practice in the house.
Yeah.
You don't have to actually pull the trigger is what you said.
I mean, Correct. I bet I've mounted the gun more times without a shotgun shell in the chamber than I have with. Honest to God.
Yeah.
Especially when I was a lot younger. But Desi catches me all the time. I'm mounting the gun in the living room.
He sets it in a specific corner that he walks by every time he goes into the kitchen or walks into the dining room or walks into the living room. And every time he walks by that gun, he'll pick it up, mount it four or five times, set it back down, and continue on. I swear, every day.
I've seen people doing this also. When you're at a tournament and you're shooting your gun, you know, you're going to shoot the prelim today and first part of the main, and then your buddy comes up with a new gun and you start pointing their gun. Mm-hmm. Does that have any sort of effect on you?
Maybe in the past, not anymore, personally.
What about someone that's newer?
Somebody that's newer? Absolutely, it could. I mean, if you start, then you start listening to Jim Bob about what changes he made on his stock and what he thinks is right. And if you're,
it's totally
get with a good gun fitter. Get with a Jim Greenwood or a Rich Cole. And someone you trust. Someone that you believe what they're saying. Let them set your gun up. And don't touch it. I think part of my consistency over the last few years is that I'm shooting the same gun for the past 7. It feels like putting on a broken-in pair of jeans or a broken-in pair of boots. It's like it's mine. It's an extension of my body. It's a combination of all that competition and all those practice gun mounts. And I think that's important for a lot of people. Stick with your main competition gun. Have it set up correctly. And don't deviate.
And we'll probably touch on this subject a little later, but when, especially at the Southeast Regional Beretta course, right, kind of infamous on that, when the targets get really challenging and you start to get real tight, it reflects in your body. Your arms get tighter, your hands get tighter, you're gripping the gun tighter, you might be leaning forward a little bit more, trying to get really aggressive with the birds, and you're not going to mount the gun the same as if you were just out on the practice course relaxed and you didn't have a lot of tension in your arms and you weren't leaning forward. So sometimes when the targets get really challenging and we're trying to make everything happen, we get more aggressive just in our gun mount in general. And obviously, it's not going to feel the same because that's not how you always shoot physically, really. It's not necessarily a mental aggression where you're just swinging the gun faster. It's literally maybe leaning forward more, gripping the gun tighter with your hands. So your arms are tighter and it feels heavier. And sometimes that's happened to me. I notice, especially on a real quick pair, I have to remind myself to take all the tension out of all my body, my arms, my legs, so that I'm more relaxed. So when I do mount the gun, everything comes in together. My cheek touches the gun in the same spot. It feels comfortable. When I get really aggressive and I'm trying to maybe get on the bird a little sooner, I tend to lean forward a little bit more. I put my head down a little bit tighter. and that's not the same place that I mounted the gun before.
Right. Yeah. Comes down to fundamentals. Get another reason to get with a good coach, understanding your fundamentals and not deviating from that. I think in the long run, in the big picture, is going to help with all of that.
Yeah. The other issue, I had several issues, but another issue I had was with hold points. Okay, so we've got the gun mounted, and we've got wherever the hold point needs to be, wherever I thought it needed to be, it seemed like it was always wrong. Either I was holding the gun too close to the trap, and the bird was beating me, or I felt that, and then I moved it out a little bit, and then it still didn't feel right. It's right. Like I could not find that sweet spot where to hold the gun.
I almost feel like your whole point could have been wrong. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that's more of a case of maybe when you feel like you're holding in on the trap and you're getting beat, that sometimes that's obvious. But then if you feel like you move out and you're still getting beat, I think that's more of eye placement. When you're calling pool, where are you looking? You're getting beat visually, which is causing the gun to be out of sync with the target at the trigger.
Right.
So understanding where to look for that same target is equally as important as it, or maybe more than where the gun actually is. If your plan is to come out on the back edge of the bird, you want to let it beat you. And that's going to be a slower, maybe a slower quartering shot. The faster that target gets, not only does your hold point need to move out, you may not be wanting to come from the back edge of the fast quartering shot. You're going to hold out, but your eyes also need to come out from the trap. Your where you're looking changes with the speed of the bird. The slower the bird is, the tighter to the trap you want to be. The faster that same target is, the further out you need your eyes. You want that bird to come through your peripheral. The fast birds, you want that bird to initially appear coming through your peripheral into your central vision, and that's where you're going to see it the best. That's how you're going to your eyes going to acquire it the best, I should say it that way.
Talk up today, I was shooting, we were up on, I don't know what stand it was here at Four City, and there was a left bird, the A bird was quartering out and up, and I missed it the first two times I shot at it.
Right.
And you had to step in and help me with it.
Right.
Explain what I was doing wrong.
I think you were really looking actually a little too far out. You had your hold point too far out and your eyes too far out. And that bird was, you were moving on the flash and you're coming out on a quartering shot that took no lead. You were coming off the front edge of the target and applying lead that wasn't there. So you had that lost feeling. When you feel lost, more often than not, you're playing too far off the front of the bird and you have no feel. Like I said, and I'm, there's other coaches out there, other shooters out there that shoot that bird a little bit differently than me, but I actually want that bird to get out, get off the trap. I want to see it well and then start moving from the backside of that target, moving into it. And again, we're talking about a target with no lead.
Yeah.
But it was down below the stand. We were up on a berm. It was coming out under your feet, off to your left side, coming out from behind a tree.
There's a comfort level with the relationship between your hold point and where your eyes are set. How big are your eyes set? How small of an area are you looking? How far away? Are you looking too close? Are you looking too far? So there's that relationship there, which can make the bird feel good or feel fast. And then in turn, that hold point and that eye set, like Zach's saying, when it gets too far out and you still feel that uncomfortable feeling and you're playing too far off the bird, all you've really done is shorten the window of the time frame you have to shoot the bird. You don't have as much time to match the speed. You don't have as much gun movement. And both of those things help you feel more control of a target. The more space you have to make a move on a bird, to feel the speed of the bird, the more comfortable you feel. So it's kind of maybe two different aspects, really. But the hold point and the eye set definitely go hand in hand. If you're changing one, you probably need to at least address the other and make sure that you're doing it in the right spot. Like Zach said, your hold point might have been fine before. You were just looking in the wrong spot. Or maybe you were looking in the right spot, but you felt like it took an eternity for the bird to get out and you just didn't have any feel to it. Well, in that case, if you could see the bird and it didn't feel fast, well, maybe you should move your hold point in so you can get to that bird a little sooner. Yeah. So they're kind of, I describe them as personal cues When I feel like I'm just sticking the gun out there and I don't have any connection with the bird, that's my first cue that I'm starting too far off the front of the bird. I'm inserting too much lead, or I'm not giving myself enough space to match the speed of the bird. If the bird, you know, rushes out and it feels really fast, the first thing I'm going to address is my eyes. Am I looking around? Are my eyes still versus, you know, jumping around when I call pull? And then I'm going to address my whole point in relation to that. So it's always a combination of things that can happen.
So you're talking about eyes on a fast quarter in target, the trap's next to you. Your eyes aren't nowhere close to that trap.
No.
They're looking out, and you're looking for the flash.
Yep.
And then you lock on the target, and you move your gun.
You want to know an interesting aspect of that, of that you're talking about quartering? Eye dominance can play a factor in that. I would tell you, I can, off my right side, I'm a strong right eye dominant shooter, okay? On my right side, if that trap is on my right, I can look tighter into the trap than I can off my left side. Okay. The other part, again, for Justin here, your ocular center is more right tear duct. Your right eye, you're definitely shoot off the right shoulder, but you're a little bit in towards your nose. So what I would tell you, another aspect, both targets that you struggled on today that you mentioned were off your left side. Okay. So a lot of times, you need to turn your head, get your head off the gun, turn your head in to that left side and try to get, believe it or not, try to get your right eye to pick up the bird with your left eye rather than not having your head turned far enough left and you're only your left eye picking it up. If only your left eye picks it up and you start turning with that bird or rotating with that target, you bring the gun into view, that's when things start to look a little strange as far as a bird barrel relationship. If you can get your head turned all the way around, get that bird. I joke to people all the time. I tell them, pretend you don't have two eyes. Pretend you have one eye. You're a cyclops. It's right in the middle of your forehead. And for you to see anything, I want you to keep your nose pointed at the bird from beginning to end. Keep that bird directly in front of you. And sure enough, that they start shooting immediately better because it's just a simpler picture. It's a simpler visual process of picking up the target, incorporating bringing the gun into play, and being confident that what you're seeing is correct.
Zach, you talk a lot about, and Desi does too, looking, I'm going to call it looking in the space, you know, the flight path of the bird, your whole point's here. You're not focusing. You're just looking, you know, you got a visual whole point also. Yep. Your eyes have a visual whole point as well as your gun has a whole point. Can you explain that, the visual whole point?
The visual whole point, I mean, you could shoot, honestly, on most of these courses, you may go through five or six stations where the visual whole point isn't really part of the struggle or part of the challenge because the bird takes a while to develop.
Yeah.
You know, and you got a lot of time to execute the shot. And then you can go five or six stands in a row where, yeah, I just need to look over there and just pick it up and watch it come in and then make my move. And then we get to one in, you know, some quick quartering shot or trap shot, something where that visual pickup point becomes extremely critical. That's, again, part of the challenge of sporting clays and the variety of sporting clays. So you could go through a whole course. You may shoot a whole day. Bunch of loopy big crossers, stuff up in the sky where it's a non-issue. And then you may go to another club with another target setter where he's making all of that really critical. Anthony, this past weekend at the Northeast Regional versus the Southeast Regional, I would tell you that Anthony probably made those technical targets where you needed to be looking in the right spot super critical. Whereas some of the bigger stuff out in the sky that we shot at other shoots, non-issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So but, you have to understand it and then understand that it's a factor on some shots and a complete non-factor on others.
Yeah. All right. I got one
more. What would you say on that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a visual whole point. How big is that area? How small is that area? And where is it really in relation to my whole point or where I want to pick the bird up? I'm always looking just generally speaking, I'm always looking just past the target line. But that also depends on how far out the bird is. How far out am I looking and how close am I looking? So that visual hole point, just like everything else, you know, adjusts according to the bird. I think more people need to put emphasis on where and how they're looking than their hole point is. I think a lot of times people perceive speed. They perceive that a bird is fast. They feel like it's fast because their visual hole points are wrong.
Your eyes can slow the bird down.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of what I've figured out about hole points is if I move my eyes out, even if the gun's in the same spot, I can slow the bird down a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no question.
At the end of the day, we always talk about looking hard at the bird at fire. You know, steer at it with intense visual focus when you fire. Well, how we set our eyes is the starting point of how we got to that moment. Am I starting in a really big area and having to zoom in really quick? Am I starting in a really big area and have a lot of time to zoom in? Am I starting in a smaller area and then I can, you know, the zoom factor, as I call it, is not as drastic during the shot. And I think that plays a big role in what we perceive as control in terms of speed or lack of speed when you're saying you're slowing down the bird. Zach uses the analogy a lot of a camera lens. I've got a wide angle lens and I want to zoom in on the bird. Wide angle would be soft focus and then you're getting to hard focus, zoomed in. Well, am I trying to zoom in with that camera lens in 2 seconds or am I trying to do it in 4, 5, 6 seconds?
Right.
Well, I'm not going to start with the widest vision I possibly can if I need to get really tight, really quick, because that's difficult to do with our eyes. And in turn, the bird feels like it's fast. We feel like we have less control. So I think the timing of the shot has a bearing on, you know, how big that soft focus may be. Obviously, placement of soft focus would be where you're picking the bird up and where you're shooting it in the flight path.
No.
It plays a big factor in.
I would say in the grand scheme for the, obviously we can't show in this setting in a podcast, we can't show people specific targets and talk through them perfectly. But I would tell the more beginner or novice shooters to pay attention to call pull on your view bird and figure out your kill point and how much time from calling pull that bird coming off the trap, how quickly does it get to where I need to kill it? And as that time is decreased, you probably need to think even more about where your eyes are. As that time increases and you know there's, if it's under 2 seconds, then you better be thinking about and planning out where you're looking and how you're going to pick up that bird. If you call pull and, you know, 1-1000, 2-1000, 3, and if it's past 3, 4, 5 seconds, then it's probably not that important. That would be that's rule of thumb. That may not apply 100% of the time, but that's pretty good info.
Yeah. Last bird on this topic, I guess I could say. I'm going to try to draw this out with words because I can't show you an image. But the stand, we're standing in the stand looking straight out. The trap may be over slightly to my left, okay, out in front of me. Okay, so let's say 35 yards out in front to the left, and it's a teal. Okay, but it's not going straight up. It's kind of going to the right. Mm-hmm. And this bird was on the Pure Gold course. I don't remember the station at the Southeast Regional. So the trap was out 35 yards or so to my left, and the bird was going up to the right. All right, I have a problem with that. Now, I hit it, I think it was three times. I hit it two of the three times. But I hit it not knowing what I was doing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I had to have got close because I hit it. But on that target, I have no clue where the best spot is to hold my gun and then where to pull the trigger. Because it's on an angle now. It's not straight up. So you can't just shoot above it like you're shooting.
Did that stand have like a little flopper teal behind like the second target?
I don't remember.
No, it's a short stand teal. We started on. It's a ripping up and then you had a quartering out from the right.
Correct. There it is. That's it.
Station, I think we started on 8, maybe. I think station 8 was what it was. And you were facing into the woods, and it was about 35 yards, and it was quartering up. It didn't have a lot of speed, but you didn't have a very big window.
Right.
So the bird wasn't super fast. You just had a small window to shoot it in before it hit the trees. You couldn't shoot it on the drop.
I mean, I'll go first. I, I really think it's important to kind of cut that angle off, be holding inside the angle, so to that bottom right of the line, and that allows you to see that bird come out. I think it's critical on those angles shots like that is to see the angle early, and just depending on how much lead there is merging into that bottom front side. I mean, I know it's climbing, but it's going to feel like you're coming in from that bottom front side of the angle. And the faster the bird is, the more lead you want to insert. The slower the bird is, the more you want to be on the bird or close to the front edge.
Yeah.
But I think working through the bottom of the line, seeing the line, understanding the line is probably the most critical there. What do you think, Des?
Yeah, I would agree. Eyes, I think, play a huge factor in that bird, because you need a bird-barrel relationship very quickly, and you only have a very short space to be able to feel control, match up with the bird. For myself, personally, I have started coming out of the gun slightly. I'm still shouldered, but I'm coming out of the gun slightly, so I can pick up that bird a little bit sooner. I don't feel like I'm occluding anything when I'm all the way, you know, fully pre-mounted. And what that also does is it gives me a little bit of a timing factor. So as I start to merge with the bird, I'm already kind of in sync with it a little bit. It's very difficult to start fully pre-mounted on that shot and go from zero to in sync with the bird in a tiny little window. And whether the, you know, obviously the faster the bird is, you can kind of say rip and grip, you know, grip and rip and just kind of move through it. But the slower that bird is, the more gun control it requires. So you want to have a lot of visual discipline, and coming out of the gun gives me that timing factor and the ability to pick up the bird with my eyes a little sooner than maybe if I was pre-mounted.
Yeah.
That holding on the line there in both cases, or both of our descriptions of it, is probably not the best thing. You want to, you can get feel of your, you know, we're talking about a few inches out there.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly.
And, but that being off that line and that your hands moving up to the line gives you you don't have to be on the bird to be gaining control of the bird. I think a lot of that'll help some people out there. It's about moving the same speed as the bird and merging into the line. You're as you hit the line, you're going to be in sync. Maybe not fully, but you're almost there. You can, and then it's, and then you have that short amount of time to move with the target and kill it as you're seeing it even better.
Right. Yeah.
You want to give yourself as much time to be moving the same speed as the bird as possible. So being just inside, like he said, even though I'm not on the bird, I'm starting to get matched up with it. So as I do get into the line, I'm relatively close to the same speed as the bird.
Yeah.
And you get that extra little bit to look hard and really feel the bird. The other thing, that's just a hard bird, man.
Sometimes they're just hard.
It's just hard. And you might be able to break it once or twice, but four times is hard to do.
Yeah.
It's just, I think sometimes we forget that. You know, we describe it in perfect context and theories, and this is our approach. And you get up there and you make it happen and you go, man, that was easy. Well, try doing it 2, 3, 4, 5 times. It's just hard.
You got 10 guys out there right now that have been doing it for 20 to 30 years, and they can make it look easy. Some people, I tell my younger students all the time, cut yourself some slack. I've done this for 30 years. I've shot almost 200,000 registered targets. I have made the same mistakes you're making right now way more than you have.
Yeah.
Cut yourself some slack. Learn from your mistakes. Learn from what I'm telling you, because I know
experience.
I've done it. I've done it. But at the end of the day, just understand that this game is hard. If it was easy, we'd be shooting skeet and trap. Ooh, ba-doom.
All right. So let's move on to another big topic that was from the regional. Okay. And that's the towers. There was a tower. It seemed like every time I looked, I saw a tower. But there wasn't that many towers.
Yeah.
There was, what, one station? I mean, one.
No, there were a lot of towers. I mean, that was awesome regional. Dominic spared no, even the Northeast, both regionals, I mean, they spared no expense in bringing in towers. There was multiple towers on every event on every course. So
when I walk up, when I walk up to a tower, the first thing I say, and I'll say it in, you know, where I don't have to bleep it out, is, oh my God, I'm serious. you know, so, and the further up they are, let's just start like this. It don't matter if it's off the ground 10 foot. I start thinking, you know, and these towers were up there.
Some of them are way up there.
Way up there. Yeah. All right. Well, the first thing that runs through my mind is, I hope I hit all of these. Well, that's the wrong way to walk up to a station. It's not walking up, I hope I hit all these. But right. That's what's running through my mind because they're so intimidating to me.
Right.
I've never been able to practice tower shots. So why are they so intimidating to me? Let me tell you something else. If you was to take that tower and put it on the ground and throw the same bird across the ground.
Closer to eye level.
Closer to eye level. I probably wouldn't have a problem with them. But raise them up. And here we go with having issues. What is so different about them?
You kind of answered your own question again in that you're not as experienced on them. Okay. You need to start really paying attention to, is the base of that tower the same level as where I am? What really analyze where they have that tower, where you're standing in relation to it, and think about what they're trying to trick you with. Try to pay attention to, are they throwing that bird straight off the tower? Have they have the machine angled down? Do they have the machine angled up? More often than not, I notice people forget the in front and behind. That's a factor on every target we shoot. But yeah. People miss the line. And more often than not, I see people miss low, under the line on a tower. Some miss over the top too. But a lot of people just miss under the line and just miss the line, misreading what that target setter is trying to do. Anthony set some targets this last week where he had a quartering pair off your left shoulder, not far, but one machine was driving way down into the ground from the tower, and the other trap was going up as it came off the tower. So there was similar speeds, but very different leads because of the angle he was throwing the bird. I think people just think tower, they think lead, and they're not worried about analyzing and being aware of the line and what that target setter is trying to do to you. At the Southeast Regional, especially Eric Dorsey, he didn't throw a bird straight off a tower at any point. They were all up or down, a lot of them down. That fee task, the parkour two or one or two, he threw some off-speed, just
layout one
knuckleball tower shots at 60 yards where it never had a straight line.
Yeah.
And everyone, I promise you, everyone is worried about lead and they're not thinking about line.
Okay. That was my next question I had. Like I said, I had notes here.
Right.
Why do I always want to put more lead on a tower shot?
You think big. You just think, oh, that thing's way up there and
a lot of times people see distance and they equate it with lead. Distance does not mean lead. It could potentially with angle and speed, but just distance does not necessarily mean lead. So like Zach's saying, instead of getting up and going, I don't know, try and answer the questions you do know. Okay, is the tower level with me? Is it in front? Is it behind? Is it on the same elevation? Okay, where did the tower start? Where did the target land? Try and read that angle. And then back to what you had said earlier about another topic, count. Count the seconds it takes for the bird to come out of the trap and where it is you want to shoot. It gives you a little bit better, you know, feeling on the speed of the bird. When the bird is in the sky and there's nothing behind it, it's hard to read the speed of a target. There's nothing behind it. There's nothing to judge it against. So counting, it's about the, you know, got to be good at counting. I mean, yeah. You can't be off counter, but
yeah.
Counting is about the only thing that helps with speed a little bit there. We've shot a lot of towers out in the desert, out in Arizona. Oh man, there is absolutely nothing to judge out there. It's even hard to tell how far the target's landing. So I rely a lot on that. Try and fill your mind up and answer as many questions as you can. And like I said, distance doesn't always mean lead.
Right. I tell students all the time, I can throw you a screaming 20-yard crosser that takes twice or three times the lead that a slow 50-yard crosser takes. Beginning shooters really equate distance to lead. Fact of the matter, it's speed. How much angle is on the target and how fast are they throwing it? Find out where the target's coming from. Look at where it's landing. That's a good test or a good cue on how fast that target's moving.
Yeah.
Not always. Might be crashing into something before. But speed is going to affect how much forward allowance or how much lead you need way more than distances.
Yeah, and a lot of times I see, you know, kind of the novice or intermediate shooter, they always try and approach a tower and shoot it really fast. They try and shoot it right as it comes off the arm, right as it gets out.
I've done that.
And they feel like, well, it's under power and I can really read it. But in that case, you're trying to do all of these technical things in a very short amount of time on something that you're really not reading all that well. So give yourself more time. So you have to shoot it a little bit further. A shotgun will shoot a long way. Like, give yourself a little more time to feel, match the speed of the bird, to look at the bird, to get a good bird-barrel relationship. And I promise, you'll hit more. Maybe you hit it 10 yards further than everybody else, but you hit it.
Yeah.
Zach, you're known for hitting stuff further out than a lot of people.
I am?
Yeah. I mean, like, okay. You shoot it later, I should say.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Maybe I should say it like yeah, that. You shoot it way later than a lot of people.
Right.
You'll wait on it. What's the reasoning behind that? You just want to be able to lock on it?
Wow. That's funny. When you started saying that, I started thinking about my dad. My dad would ride them to the ground, just very patient, and kill them way out there. I don't know. I just know what my gun and my ammo is capable of. I know, just ingrained, you know, 30 years. I'm not pulling the trigger till I can feel the speed of the bird and I'm seeing the target as the way I want to see it. And until both of those things happen, I'm not going to pull the trigger. So I'm just patient. Again, a lot of experience.
Yeah, and when he says patience, it's not necessarily patience of, you know, moving slow or shooting the bird later, literally. It's patience of, as you're moving with the bird, everything will come to 100%. You will get there. Not trying not to make that happen quickly allows you to shoot the bird later. So you can ride the bird all day long, but if your eyes aren't in sync with your hands, if you're trying to see the bird really early, but you're shooting it really late, you don't have a very good result. If you're trying to see the bird really late and you're shooting it early, you don't have a very good result. So patience with your eyes. The bird's not clear. I'm still moving with it. We'll keep moving with it until it does get clear. Yeah. There are some shots we just don't see all that well, but I think you're really patient with your eyes.
Well, yeah, and that's not... You know, some of the I would be coming from the pull away camp of shooters. So I can think of, for years, you know, guys would say Brad Kidd or myself or Corey Cruz, Anthony, we all run with the bird a long time. Well, early in that run, we're not looking at it hard. We're trying to see the bird clearly at a specific point. So just because it looks like we're matching the speed and moving with the bird, we haven't started hard focus yet. So that kind of leads to maybe why I tend to shoot some or people perceive that I'm shooting them
later.
Later.
I think it's innately ingrained in us. When we see a flying object go in the air, we want to look hard. We want to look hard at it. We want detail. Your eyes always want to pick up detail on whatever you're looking at. They don't want to just see a blur. So the faster we try and look hard at a bird, the more time constraint we're putting on ourselves, and we're trying to do all of this in a very small window in a very short period of time. You're not going to see the bird that quickly, that early. I don't care how good your eyes are. There's a lot of shots you don't see very well that early, and you have to be patient and realize that you will get clarity on it. It's going to be later in the flight path though.
Yeah. Missing targets. That's a pretty broad statement, but all right. Missing I always seem to want to miss, and not want to miss, but I do miss in front. Most people that miss are going to miss behind. Am I right when I say that?
I think as you get better, you tend to miss more in front.
Okay. Why?
Because you understand lead, and you understand that how much lead some targets take. You probably spent years missing behind, and you learn to get in front. I would definitely say that the better shooters miss more in front than they miss behind. Beginning shooters, but early beginning shooters are maybe more behind.
Yeah.
Just not understanding how much lead some of these targets actually do take.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the great things, I know I use it a lot with beginner shooters, you do as well. When I first started shooting, the word ballistics meant absolutely nothing to me. Like, I don't know how a shotgun shell flies through the air. Like, I see this little plastic thing go out, and there's some BBs in there. Like, but I don't know what actually happens. And I'm not that big of a rifle shooter, so I really don't know what happens much there either.
Yeah.
But Zach uses this whole analogy, especially with beginners, and kind of describes to them the ballistics of a shotgun shell. When you shoot a shotgun shell, the front pellet comes out, and then behind it, dispersed, is all these pellets behind it. It's almost like a swarm. They don't come out in this round, perfect ball, and we're not shooting one projectile at the bird. We always kind of envision in our head, oh, I have to shoot the shot at the target in order to break it. Well, I'm not necessarily trying to shoot the pellets at the target. I'm trying to shoot the pellets into the air where the target runs into them. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
So then it starts to bring up this whole concept of lead, where you can shoot the pellets in front of the bird and still break the bird. Where I think when we first start, we just imagine this little round ball going at the clay and breaking
like
it.
Like a flat ball just going out there. Right. Like they're all out there already.
Yeah.
The faster, the more angle and the more speed on the bird, the more, I believe, I'm sure someone will disagree, but this is what I feel, that shot string becomes more usable the more angle and the more speed that's on the target. Just put that shot string out in front of the target. And when I describe, when Desi's talking about, when I'm describing it to beginning shooters, I tell them it's a three-dimensional shape. There's a front and a back to it. And it's on these targets, let's place that swarm out in front of the bird and let the bird fly into it as much as the swarm's flying into the target. We need the two to collide. And just that description of it to them allows them to start putting lead on a target and understanding that. So I don't know if that fully applies to the question, but...
Well, let me ask it this way. If I put, say I'm shooting by myself.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm missing in front, but I don't know that I'm missing in front. What's your next step?
I think those shots where you think I looked at it pretty good. I don't feel in control of the bird. You're in front. If you don't feel the speed of the bird, if you don't feel in control of the bird, there's a 90% chance you're missing in front if you're not offline. When you're behind, you know you're behind. As you get more experienced, behind is a feeling that's much more, we feel that much easier than when we feel in front.
Yeah.
I think that's a fact.
Yeah.
I would say, as you know, but we had a joke actually this last weekend at M&M at the Northeast Regional. So we shot P-Task with Clayton Nance, Katie Fox, Zach, myself, Connor Daniel. And we'd come up to a few things and we had this rabbit on the ground. I mean, it was probably, I don't even know, 5 yards.
10 feet.
Yeah, it was like, the most uncomfortable shot I've ever made in my entire life. And we were, you know, a couple of us were just struggling on that rabbit. And we joked, well, if you don't know what to do, just shoot right at it. Then we finished that layout. We came up to the next layout, looked at the first bird, and we all looked at each other and we went, yep, shoot right at that one. And then we looked at the next bird. We all looked at each other. And we said, yep, shoot right at that one too. So it's fun. It's kind of ironic, but there's a lot of birds you shoot right at. So
a lot.
If you've missed 2-3 times, unless it's a 55-yard full spring bird, yeah, you're probably out in front. So when in doubt, shoot right at it. If you don't know what's going on, just shoot right at it and see what happens.
I tease all the time, and I mean it. And maybe not. We're not talking about a Anthony Matarese regional or a Rick Hemingway regional or Eric Dorsey. We're talking about a normal sporting clay course. I tell shooters all the time, if you can match the speed of the bird, look at the bird fairly well. No one looks at it perfectly. I never looked at 100 birds in a row perfectly. If you can match the speed of the well, look at the bird well, and shoot the front edge, you can break 70 on any course. Any,
I agree.
Any traditional sporting
course. Now the key there is matching the speed of the bird and looking at it. Those are factors that we just kind of gloss over. You are shooting right at it, but you have to match the speed and look hard at it. But yeah, when in doubt, shoot them in the face.
There we go. That sounds like a good idea.
That doesn't, obviously not some big crosser, but a lot of these quartering shots that people struggle with, a lot of this easier stuff, trap birds, even stuff coming out over your head. A lot of times those shots are front edge.
Yeah.
Or minimal lead.
I wrote this down. It doesn't really bother me, but I thought about it.
Right.
If you random squad with people that you don't know, what kind of pressure would that put a pressure on you to where you could miss because you don't know these people? You don't really want to be shooting. You know, you follow what I'm saying?
Pressure. For me, the better shooters, it doesn't matter one bit. In fact, for a lot of guys, I bet it would be an advantage to not necessarily be shooting with your buddies.
Yeah.
As a coach, I can tell you, not so much here in Georgia, but I can remember when Desi and I would, every time we'd get random squatted in an event, say in San Antonio or at a Texas State or a Nationals or something, you make more friends and you get potential clients. You meet people that you wouldn't necessarily always have a full conversation with. You might say hi, but I don't see it as a negative at all. Neither of us have. It's not an issue. You know, you want to...
Okay,
Desi and I traveling together, there's a, you know, who has the buggy, who has the cart, who has that we got to worry about that part. But as far as going out and performing with a random squad, for I'm not going to speak for Desi, but it's not really an issue for us.
Okay, well, let me ask it this way.
Yeah,
say I'm a B class shooter,
mm-hmm.
and I squad with you, and you shoot behind, it don't matter where you shoot, you're just in my squad.
Yeah,
doesn't that put pressure on that shooter, knowing that they've got somebody really good in the squad
It would depend on the personality of the shooter. Maybe.
The majority, probably.
I hope not, because let's be honest, what? The only one worried about your score is you.
Right.
Yeah, I don't care. I think the truth is, yes, people get very nervous and intimidated when they shoot with you. Oh, came off?
Okay, so anybody good? For those B-class shooters out there that get squatted with a random pro, trust me when I tell you this, whether you're hitting him or missing him, that does not affect that pro's performance in any way. That pro, on the same note, is not judging your performance in any way. So don't try not to really, it's a non-issue.
Yeah, they're not saying, oh, this guy sucks.
I mean, right. We're not playing golf where we're having to wait for you. You're going to get in there and shoot your pairs just at the same speed we are. Funny. I mean, and this, we were talking about this weekend. You had an interview a month or two ago with John Comerford.
Yeah.
How many championships have been won with John Comerford shooting directly in front of myself or a Corey Cruz or an Anthony Matteries?
Right.
Okay. Trust me. He's shooting 78. Okay. Right. Well, no, come on.
That's okay, I love John, but he's a little bit of a mess sometimes.
So, non-issue. Don't think that you're affecting that pro's day because you're hitting or missing. And don't think that pro is looking down on you because they're missing, because they've missed more than you have, I promise.
Yeah. My next question was, does that person shooting worse than you affect you? And you answered that question already. No, it doesn't affect you.
No, it does not at all. I would tell you, there's probably some groups of shooters out there that would probably benefit from a random squad. You know your buddy that squad morale, squad, what was the word we were using this weekend?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but
you have someone in there that's having a bad day, that can affect the squad in a negative way if they're letting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I know for us, we're trying to win. You're there to try and win. You are there to try and hit every single target that you possibly can. The guy who hits the most, the guy or girl who hits the most wins. It doesn't matter if you're experienced or not. But so we're there to compete, and you want to do that in a manner of such. But sporting clays is a social sport. That's why I love it. It's not Traverse Key where you can't talk. It's not a sport where you can't get squad morale or meet new people at that moment. And it doesn't matter if you're good or bad. I mean, just talking to your squad mates helps everybody, in my opinion. The person who doesn't talk to anyone that they're shooting with feels, to me, this is my personal opinion, feels disconnected. They're out there, well, they might as well just be shooting by themselves. I'm not saying that you have to call people shots and, you know, rah-rah every time they shoot, but be a part of the squad. And it's my job as a squad mate, regardless of who I'm shooting with, to pay attention. whether you're a B-class shooter, an E-class shooter, or a master-class shooter, while you're shooting, I want to be standing up there and watching you shoot so that if the ref misses a call or if you have a question or something happens, people are there to watch. And look, when you're shooting in a squad, you know, I want to have the feeling that someone's backing me up, whether that be just standing behind and, you know, wanting me to do well or and again, it's not a coaching factor. It's just being a part of the squad, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wait till your entire squad's finished shooting before you drive to the next stand. It's kind of more of an etiquette type of thing, I think, that goes along with that.
If you're leading off, wait for everyone to get up there behind you before you start viewing birds.
I think sometimes we get away from that when we start to say, oh, he's professional and I don't want to bother him, or oh, they're not a professional, don't worry about them, you know.
There's not much anyone can do on the course that's going to bother me. It ain't going to bother me.
You could sit back there with the baby or a camera. I don't care. I don't even notice it. And I, you know, it doesn't bother me. I love random squatting.
What if somebody pulled up with their Polaris with a radio on?
They need to turn it off before we shoot.
That was a joke.
Yeah.
Oh, I did that today, didn't I?
Yeah, loud and blaring.
All right, so one more thing I want to talk about before we get off, and that's the Winchester Ladies Cup. Okay, I've been kind of trying to keep up with that.
Yeah,
and it seems to me like these women are laying it down.
Oh yeah,
right now, you know, they're posting photos, and then you look at the scores, you're like, dang, these girls shot that. I mean, how do you think that's changing the sport?
I think the money's obviously incentivized those top shooters to compete well. And in three events, the Winchester Ladies Cup is the five stand, the main, and the FITASC. So not only are you having to do well in one event, but you're having to do well all weekend. So it's definitely incentivized them at, you know, certain ladies in a financial factor. But it's also more exciting to see how it kind of develops over the weekend. And you realize that you don't necessarily have to be top dog in all of them. You just have to hang. And then you can make things up. You know, if you have a little hiccup or a bad round, you can make it up, but you got to shoot well in your other events. And it's actually been a really good surprise, and kind of it makes me excited. A lot of people have come up to me who have mentioned following the Winchester Ladies Cup races, watching the points races at each shoot. They don't have a daughter. They don't have a wife that shoots. You know, the ladies category wasn't a big factor before. But they're enjoying watching it, whether they're a good shooter or not. And I think it's what it's designed to do. That's what we were hoping for, was more visibility in the excitement of the sport, especially in the ladies category. And it's been awesome to hear about.
I feel myself doing it. Going and looking at, and let me tell you something else, and you might have noticed this, but we haven't even had three so far.
Three.
There's been somebody different in them all three times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody. There might be the same people, you know, maybe in there, but somebody's been different.
Right.
In there all three times. And I find myself going to wherever the scoring is at and looking at that. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
I think it's fun to watch.
The breakdown of it, like you said, I was really pleased to see that happen between the three, that you have a good mix of ladies getting into each position, doing it in different ways. Some of it was done on the main event. Some of it was done on a FITAS. Some of it, they kind of snuck in just a few birds on the five stand and in different, very different venues, Arizona to Georgia to New Jersey. And it's very different targets. So it's exciting to see that mix and kind of the influx of, again, spectatorship in the sport, whether it be the ladies or not. You know, maybe somebody watches the Ladies Cup race and gets out there and says, you know what, maybe I want to shoot some more just because they're there or they're excited about it. I don't know. Yeah, it's good.
I think it's a great thing. Yeah. I think it's good for the sport, especially for the women.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
We actually had our first shoot off at the last shoot for the Winchester Ladies Cup.
Well, that's cool.
Which was good.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think over 500 targets, and if it's a 200 bird FITASC,
that you have
over 500 targets, that you'd have an exact same number for 1, 2, and 3. You kind of think of it in a 100 bird course. Oh yeah, we could potentially shoot the same score, but over a 500 bird race to shoot the same exact numbers, it's getting after it.
Yeah. So what's up next? You going to, I'm sure, the Open?
We leave in 12 days for the U.S. Open. Should be good. Another Ladies' Cup event. Another big, important American Sporting Clay Championship.
Is that one you have not won?
I have not won. I've got some silvers and bronzes.
Well, maybe you'll get it this time.
One of these days.
He deserves it. I don't know if
Claythorne. Hey. I won the last regional at Claythorne. Shot very well. I'm looking forward to it. I'm fairly pleased overall with my consistency. I think I've been third or fourth at all three regionals this year, and I have definitely not shot anywhere near my best. So that's a good feeling, knowing that I am performing at a high level, even though I'm not at my highest level.
Yeah.
I was shooting really well that Gator Cup this year. I put 5 scores in a row in the high 90s with a 99 and 100 and on good targets. And that's when I was kind of really rolling. December, I was rolling real good, won that Southeast Regional and Florida State shoot. I've not performed at that level here in the last month or two, but it's not far off.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to keep an eye on you. Make sure you're doing everything right. If you need any help, just come ask me.
Okay.
So I appreciate you two being on with me. I hope that this helps some people.
There's some good info in there for sure.
Yeah.
More technical than others.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to ask easy questions or try to ask them in an easy way where you can understand them. And I think we did okay with that on this episode. So thanks for coming on and doing that, spending time with me.
No problem. Thanks, Justin.
So we'll catch y'all at the open. I'll be there too.